is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Well, welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors at KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is, of course, to be proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. As always, I'm Dave Vesladol, your host, along with my co-host, Andy Beham.
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
Actually, pretty good today. Pretty good today.
That's good.
Didn't exactly do anything super exciting this weekend. I actually kind of stuck around home and got some chores done.
Nice.
My wife left me a list, so.
It's about time you fill that role. I always feel like that's what I'm saying every time we record.
Yeah, that's usually the case. But hey, Andy, first, what about you? You were on vacation.
I didn't stick around. I was up north with a group of 22 of my closest guy friends for a man weekend. We were up in a 10-mile lake just outside of Hackensack, and a group of us that have been friends since high school or college that every year we do this, and it's an amazing weekend, but four days later, I'm still recovering.
Is this where you did some volunteer work at the orphanage? And
we'll go with that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a good weekend.
Oh, good. Hey, Andy, I got, just before we get into our topic for the day, just a couple of quick little things I wanted to pass on to our listening public out there.
Yeah, the DNR reached out to us, so let's pass it on.
Yeah. First, the DNR finally released their first statewide deer plan. Aims at not only building relationships and increasing transparency, but there's been a long push for landowners, hunters, and environmental groups and the DNR to work more closely together. So they have released their 10-year plan for the management of the deer herd in Minnesota. And we'll have more about that as we get closer to deer hunting season. But I think this is a good thing.
Yeah.
If you can get all of those people to be, you know, somewhat happy with a plan put together, I think someone did a lot of homework.
Yeah. Anytime you can get a large group to be somewhat happy, you've succeeded. Yeah. So, yeah, that report's out on the DNR website. So go out and check it out, and we'll have more information as we get closer.
The other thing I wanted to let people know is about Little Allen's Law. That went into effect August 1st. And if people don't remember what this law is all about, there was a snowmobile accident a while back where a snowmobiler who was impaired, he was over the legal limit for drinking, he hit a little boy.
I want to say he was 8 years old, if I remember right.
Eight years old, and he died. And what this law means is that if you lose your driving privileges in your car, you also now lose all your driving privileges for your boat,
yeah,
your snowmobile, your ATV, any motorized vehicle.
Well,
and it was named in for Little Allen.
It's time to get responsible about those things. I know this year, too, they passed that if you're caught drinking on a boat, it's treated exactly the same as if you're drinking in a car. You know, enough accidents have happened, and
yeah,
go out, have fun. And I know I'll have a beer or two while I'm out on the boat, but that's time to cut it off there. You're out there to have fun and let everybody else on the lake be safe and have fun themselves. So
yeah, this was such a sad story. And so it's nice to see some good come out of this tragedy.
Like yeah. That. Yeah. So, all right.
Well, today we're going to talk Cannon River Watershed Partnership, and we are lucky enough to have Christy Purcell, the Executive Director of the Cannon River Watershed Partnership. So, welcome, Christy.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, let's start out with, who is Christy Purcell?
That's me.
Yeah.
It's only a half-hour show, Dave.
Yeah, okay. But give us a little bit of background. You know, how did you get involved with this? What is your background
so
people get to know you a little bit
better?
Yeah.
So I grew up in Rochester, not too far away, in the Zumbro watershed. So we'll talk. I'll have to explain what a watershed is in a minute, but so I grew up kind of the next watershed over, south and east of here in Rochester. I lived in several places around Minnesota and around the country, really connected with water early on in different ways, you know, being at the lake, like you were talking about. And
well, you're in the right state.
Yes, exactly. So I moved around all kinds of places and came back to my home state. I was in Minneapolis about 6 years, and my spouse got really into farming and was doing urban agriculture up there. We were farming on a parking lot, and I was doing environmental education and food education for kids. Have had very dear friends in Northfield. My mother lives here, and we had friends for 6 years trying to convince us to move to Northfield, and a job came open at CRWP, the community engagement coordinator position, and that facilitated our family to move our farm out to the country and grow in the country, and then for me to take the position at CRWP. So I was the community engagement coordinator for about a year and a half, and then the interim director for about a year, and then just in March I became the executive director.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a big job.
It's been a journey. Yeah. It's been a journey.
Well, how about explaining to us, you brought it up, what is a watershed?
Right. So with watershed in our name, a lot of folks ask, and kids especially, they think it's a little house that you keep water because it's a watershed. But a watershed is an entire area of land where every drop of water that falls on the land, you know, might soak into the ground, or it could run off into a particular body of water. So we have sub watersheds like Mud Creek or Wolf Creek, or but then they run into the Cannon, and then of course the Cannon River watershed. Eventually, all that water goes to the Mississippi. So watersheds kind of connect up to bigger and bigger watersheds. But our watershed we think of as being the Strait River. So down, you know, quite a bit south of Owatonna, and then the Strait and the Cannon connect in Faribault and out to Red Wing.
So all of Minnesota isn't just one watershed running right into the Mississippi River.
Right.
So we have multiple watersheds?
So we are the headwaters for three different watersheds.
Okay.
So we have water that goes south down to the Gulf, the Mississippi. We've got, of course, the Lake Superior watershed. And then there's even water kind of more like the northwest corner. That water all goes up to the big bay in Canada that I'm forgetting the name of.
Thunder Bay?
Hudson Bay.
Hudson Bay.
So we have, we're the headwaters for a ton of the water in North America, really. So, you know, it makes sense. We really value water here. We have a lot. We think it's really important.
We are lucky to have that. So
California would like a little bit of our water right now.
They're not the only ones. Colorado.
So what is the mission of the Cannon River Watershed?
So our mission is engaging people in protecting and improving the water quality and natural systems of the Cannon River watershed. So we were founded in 1990 by a group of concerned citizens that we saw a need for more collaboration upstream and down, because if I do something upstream from you, well, that's going to impact you and vice versa. So trying to be sort of the coordinating entity for everyone.
Are you part of the state of Minnesota, or are you a separate entity from the state?
We are a separate entity. We're a 501c3 nonprofit.
Okay, you are a nonprofit.
Yep, we are. And when we were founded in 1990, we were founded with a pretty unique board structure. So we had six county commissioners of the six majority counties that make up the watershed, and six of the soil and water conservation district managers who were also on our board. So we had 12 elected officials on our board, plus 13 citizen members. So I think that that's been confusing for people for a long time, because we have elected officials on our board, but we're a nonprofit. Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at your website and looking at the board structure. It's pretty extensive.
Well, so we just changed our board structure at our annual meeting in May.
Oh, okay.
And so we invited those elected officials if they were so interested to stay on, but sort of everyone have the same role and expectation. Also, 25 people is a lot of people on a board.
Trying to organize, actually have a meeting?
Yes. So we're down to 16, which is still kind of a lot. But and we did have one commissioner, the Goodhue County Commissioner, Red Anderson, chose to stay on our board. But he, you know, is in the same capacity as everyone else. So
let's put you on the spot a little bit. So what? Why should we care that Cannon River Watershed Partnership exists? I mean, the average person.
Sure. Well, a lot of people don't know that we exist, which is why I was so pleased you reached out to talk to me.
Well, this is the show to come on, to get the word out.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I feel so popular.
Big time
now. Thank you. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Don't tell Jeff that when I'm on the morning show with him. Yeah, I mean, I think we, in Minnesota, it's pretty easy to take our water for granted. I just had friends visiting from Oregon, and you know, they're not going through quite the drought as California, but I think just our mentality, we don't think about water as much. So I think it's important that we exist because, well, our bodies are, what, 70%+ water. You know, we all drink water. We all use water every day in our homes and to, you know, make food and all those sorts of things. And we take for granted that it's clean, it's drinkable, it's fishable, it's swimmable, and those are things we want to maintain. I think we still have room for improvement for those things, but especially compared to a lot of places, we're very fortunate, and we want to keep it that way.
With Cannon River Watershed and what it provides for people around here, who do you see using that?
I mean, everyone, I think, uses or has some kind of relationship with, you know, with the land and the water here.
Yeah.
I think Northfield is so interesting because, like, our downtown is very vibrant, and our downtown has literally put walls up around the river, which is the reason our town exists right here. So I think it's so interesting. When I first moved here, a long time ago, I went to school here, and then I moved back for a summer, and I remember thinking, like, I just want a place where I can get in that water. You know, I was used to being up north in the summer. I just wanted to get in the water. And I was really surprised at how industrial sort of our little strip of river is. You don't have to go far to get to a park on the water, certainly. But I think, you know, we all either drive over the river or, you know, maybe we're fishing in the river or maybe we have some kind of connection. Maybe you come to our cleanup and feel like you're helping the river. But I think everyone really benefits. I think it's a quality of life thing in Minnesota and in our communities in our area, too, to have some connection to water. It's great for, you know, wildlife. It's great for the environment. And I think we all benefit. And that's why we think it's important for our organization to exist, because we a lot of people who don't know we exist, we're still benefiting even those people because we think it's important and we want to.
Well, a lot of people... You said you're around it every day. You don't realize how much you appreciate it, how much of a part of your life it is. You talk to people who move away, and they move to a New Mexico or Colorado, and they find so quickly they miss the water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of our everyday life around here, so
Absolutely. Maybe
you don't think about needing to take care of it, but you're lucky someone does.
And it's one of those things that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And let's hope we don't get to that point, but surely those people in Colorado who it's illegal for them to catch the rainwater to use, they certainly know the value of water.
Yeah.
Well, there's businesses along the Cannon River that actually directly depend on the flow of
That's
water.
Right.
But there's also businesses that depend on just having that view.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine, you know, some of our local businesses here in town without that view of the river going by. It really changes the way it looks.
That's right.
Down here and stuff. That's
sitting right on the tavern patio overlooking Malto Mule doesn't sound that great to me.
No, not at all. Do any of those businesses ever reach out to you for any help, suggestions, or anything?
You know, it's so we have great relationships with a lot of the businesses in Northfield and in Faribault and in Owatonna and Waterville and kind of a lot of the communities that are in the watershed. We have this annual watershed-wide cleanup every year. It's the weekend after Defeat Days in Northfield, so it's September 15th. So a lot of those places will reach out for sponsorships or teams, so the different businesses can get their employees together to create a workplace team to help clean up the river. I should say Cannon Falls too. We have a great couple workplace teams there. But it's so interesting because I think we're still in the mentality that the water will always be there and it'll always be fine until something like a flood happens. I mean, then you know, Froggy's is sandbagging and, you know, we're trying to keep the water away from the electrical box over here by the river and the gazebo. You know, it's like, so sometimes it does take an event like that to sort of remind people, like, the quality and the quantity of water does matter and it makes a big impact.
Talking about quality, in your opinion, what is the status of the Cannon River watershed?
That is the million-dollar question, Dave.
And how, I just want to add to that, how does it compare to what it was 20 years ago?
Sure. So, I mean, I was thinking about this because we get that question a lot. I mean, if we think about what the river was like 500 years ago, it's a lot different than that.
Yes.
If we think about what it was 100 years ago, it's a lot different than that. If we think about 20 years ago, it's a lot different than that, too. So, you know, if we're thinking about sort of pre-colonization time, if we're thinking about the Industrial Revolution, where people were just, everything was going directly into the water because then it's gone. When it's a river, oh, how convenient, it goes downstream.
Takes it away for you.
It's not our problem. Yes, exactly.
Unless you're downstream.
Unless you're downstream, yes. And then everyone's downstream from somebody. So, and I think, you know, as for 20 years ago, there are different challenges now. So about 20 years ago, I would say less than that, more recently, we've really kind of dialed down on like wastewater treatment plants, for example, or on companies that have a pipe that discharge into the water. So really, regulation has really come down on a lot of those industries. And so they've really cleaned up, they've had to clean up their act when it comes to water. What we're seeing now is actually more difficult to work on. So it's the non-pipe source pollution. So it's runoff from the streets. It's, you know, soil coming off of farm fields. It's sort of less, it's less regulatable because it's all of us. It's what I'm doing on my yard and what, you know, what cities and counties are doing to the roads too.
Is it just having more people affecting water?
That certainly affects it. So I would say, you know, when we're paving over and then water's running down the paved surfaces, going into the sewer and then going into the river, we're certainly getting a lot more volume that way versus if you haven't built anything, the water's just going to soak in right where it is. So I would say development has a big part to do with it.
Well, we're just scratching the surface there. Why don't we go ahead and take a quick commercial break, hear from our sponsor, and we come back, kind of dive a little more in depth into some of those runoffs that we're talking about and how we are going to deal with some of these difficult situations.
Great, thanks.
All right, we'll be right back.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back. We are talking with Christy Purcell, the Executive Director of Cannon River Watershed Partnership, and you're listening to KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Christy, we wanted to talk, before we took a break, we were talking a little bit about the effect of people and the runoff and stuff. Again, not trying to put you on the spot a little bit, there's certainly been a lot of discussion about buffer zones for farmers. Some farmers have really embraced it. Others have talked a little bit about, hey, I'm not crazy about being told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do cities like Northfield kind of get a pass on buffer zones? I mean, I take a look at what happens when it rains in this town. That water goes into the drain into the Cannon River. Take a look at where we're dumping all of our snow, right out next, those huge big piles right next to the
river. All of the salt and chemicals and everything.
So,
litter.
Do the cities get a little bit of a pass there? Or do they not understand that they also have a responsibility in, quote, buffer zones?
Sure. So they just have kind of a different set of challenges. So the city of Northfield and every city in Minnesota of 10,000 people or more, or 5,000 people if they're on an impaired water. So the Cannon River is considered impaired. So any community on our river system that is 5,000 or greater has a stormwater discharge permit from the Pollution Control Agency. So the things that they're needing to do for that permit is basically to mitigate or reduce the amount of stormwater runoff. So even if we don't see a, you know, kind of a grassed buffer or grassed waterway, you know, next to the canyon here in town, even if we did have that, that wouldn't necessarily help because of the infrastructure that we have here. So what I'm going to put on my, you know, chemicals or whatever I'm going to put on my driveway or in my grass, if it's going to go down the curb and gutter, it's just going in a pipe directly to the canyon. So they have a different set of challenges than say, like, what's being required for farmers and farm fields.
What is Northfield doing to try and improve? Are they doing anything to try, mm-hmm. and try and improve?
Yep. So I was just walking around my neighborhood, and someone was doing a landscaping project, and there's it looked like this really big kind of thick black snake that was like staked to the ground around a pile of dirt. So that's so if it rains, then that pile of dirt isn't just washing down into the storm drain. You know, when they're doing construction on a road, you see the kind of yellow or bright orange kind of extra catchment underneath, yeah, that storm drain. So those are all, a lot of the regulations have to do with when there's building or when there's construction to make sure that those materials and the soil isn't washing in there. There's also a whole section that they have to do education and outreach to the community to be educating people about that. We do a stormwater poster, stormwater pollution poster contest with all the elementary schools in the spring to try to teach them about, you know, pick up after your dog when they go poop, because that, you know, those nutrients and things can end up in the canyon. You know, don't salt as much. Pull your leaves and grass out of the streets. Let them decompose in a compost pile or right on top of your grass. So trying to get education and outreach, as well as there's some regulatory things the city has to do.
Do you think there's some things the city could do better?
There's always room for improvement. Okay. Always room for improvement. I would say there are some interesting things. A couple times that the salt has come up, that is basically an unregulated thing in the state of Minnesota right now. You're seeing a lot more NPR-covered salting of the lakes in the Twin Cities, a ton this last winter. I think if you have a lake, that, of course, it's staying in place.
Sure.
So we don't think of it as much here. And in the non-metro area, there's not as much surface area that's being salted, but we are really finding that our lakes are getting too salty. And it's not a thing that's regulated right now by the state. There might be policies in place at each municipal level, but that's sort of an emerging concern for our water. So that's why my answer is a little wishy-washy on how the canyon's doing, because it's doing better in some ways, but in other ways we know it's not doing as well.
Now, how about you touched on construction. You know, the property along the river is obviously very valuable, and you're going to have some larger construction projects go on. Is that a worry of yours? Do you work along with the developers, and are they doing everything they can to keep the water still clean?
You know, we've talked about, CRWP has a contract with the city of Northfield to help do education and outreach. There, we don't have the certification of, like, the stormwater specialist that the city, yep, hires, or the engineer. Those, they have, you know, the training in, like, construction specifically. And I think the construction companies, they need to abide by X, Y, and Z. So it's not really an area that I know very much about. We would love to do kind of education, reaching out to, you know, whether it's the lawn care companies or whether it's, you know, the contractors or something. We would love to help take care of kind of the education piece, but
yeah,
we don't have a part to do with the regulation.
But using more, trying to get people to realize what kind of natural fertilizers they can use.
Absolutely.
And some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Christy, have you worked at all with any of the hunting groups? Andy and I have interviewed a number of people from Ducks Unlimited, mm-hmm, Pheasants Forever, the National Wild Turkey Federation, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Has your organization, the Cannon River Watershed Partnership, done any projects with them, any educational? Has there been a connection with any of those groups?
Well, we haven't worked directly with these groups, but we have cooperated with the Circle Lake Association, the Tri-Lake Sportsman's Club.
Oh, okay.
And for several years, we helped provide funds sort of jointly to farmers to help them implement cover crops to improve the water quality in Circle Lake specifically. And so then the cover crops keep the sediment and nutrients in place and keep them from going down into the lake. We've been in touch with Pheasants Forever for potentially partnering on a project in the Rice Creek area, which is like a little bit south and west of town. And we've reached out to Trout Unlimited for that same project, working with farmers, and we would welcome additional support and future farming from them. It just kind of hasn't clicked just yet. But kind of informal, they, you know, at the Dakota County Fair took like a sign-up sheet for us up the Trout guys did. And
okay.
So,
have you seen, you brought up sediment, have you seen much improvements along those? I saw a horrifying video of kind of looking ahead at the future of Lake Pepin, which is where I do a lot of boating, and the sediment coming into the Mississippi. Uh-huh. And how, if things continue over the next 100 years, how the geography of Lake Pepin would change.
Mm-hmm. I would say we know a lot.
Yep.
We are currently doing a project, the Rice Creek project that I alluded to. We're working with farmers. Basically, it's a three-year program. Right now, we have 8 farmers on board who have agreed to plant nearly 700 acres of their corn and soybeans into cover crop between seasons. And what we're trying to do is trying to look very locally. We're trying to look at what if we got 30% or 20% of a sub-watershed, one of these smaller watersheds, what if we could really see that difference. And I mean, farmers don't want to be losing their soil. That is gold.
Yeah.
You know, like no one wants, we want the soil to stay where it is. We want the water to be just water and not, you know, have this sediment inflow. So we're trying to make sure, I mean, partnership, I really take the word partnership in our organization's name very seriously. I'm not sure I can think of anyone that we wouldn't partner with, and partnering with growers is really important. So we're trying to look locally because we know that issue about Lake Pepin filling in. We know the hypoxic zone in the Gulf. We know about, you know, the troubles in Bilsby, the kind of riverine lakes, you know, like, so we want to really work with neighbors and be able to say, hey, look, this is working here. You know, how about we try it?
Now let's implement it on a larger scale.
Absolutely.
What about your relationship with other government agencies and some of the other environmental groups? We talked a little bit about a number of the hunting groups like mm-hmm. Ducks Unlimited who, you know, push for more habitat and clean water. Kind of some of the same goals at some of the environmental groups and stuff. But does it get a little tricky dealing with some of the government agencies?
Well, so we're not a government agency.
No, that's why I was asking.
So that's, it's actually, we're kind of, it's a little bit easier for us, I think, because we, again, like we partner with all kinds of agencies and groups. So our original board structure being half these elected officials, even though we don't have the Soil and Water Conservation District supervisors or the county commissioners serving on our board of directors, we still really see them as kind of our primary partners. So all those folks are currently working on this one watershed, one plan process through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We've been in the room in the technical advisory group meetings to sort of weigh in. We were doing plans, gosh, 20 and 25 years ago, sort of watershed-wide, and now the government agencies are taking that over. So we partner really closely with the SWCDs and the counties, but we also collaborate with, you know, the DNR and the Pollution Control Agency and Bowser. We also love working with other nonprofits like ourselves. So we have a couple of projects that we're partnering with the Trust for Public Land and Great River Greening to get people information about opportunities to permanently protect and restore their privately owned land in the Cannon River watershed. We're doing outreach on behalf of the Minnesota Land Trust to let people who might be grazing animals know about opportunities to get easements on their land. And as I mentioned, this three-year cover crop study, with that project alone, we're partnering with St. Olaf, the Pollution Control Agency, Rice SWCD, a ton of partners on that project alone.
Andy and I sometimes see a lot of these hunting groups having the same goals as some of the environmental groups and stuff, but yet the gun and hook group don't always seem to work real well with environmental groups and vice versa. Are you that connectivity that could be the go-between on some of these groups?
I sure hope so. I mean, we try to be, you know, kind of the local water people. And if someone is thinking about water and they're thinking about fishing, well, that's great if they call us and figure out a way to help the fish populations. You know, if they're thinking about putting land into permanent, you know, protection or easement, and they think of us too. That's also great. I think we have that ability as a nonprofit to be a little bit of, you know, a lot of things to a lot of people. And I really think, even though it can be a little bit complicated because you might think of us one way and someone else might think of us another way, I actually think overall, even though it's a little tricky, I think overall it benefits everyone.
It's amazing how sometimes you see so many of the same groups or different groups wanting the same end game, but
They're just not.
They fight each other to get there.
Exactly. Right. And I think that's the main thing is, like, we have different ideas of how to get there, but I truly believe we all want the same goal. We all want the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, Christy, we'd certainly be remiss if we didn't bring up about the large sewage discharge event on July 3rd in this town. How serious was that to the watershed?
Well, it was serious in that we would have liked for it to not happen. 1 million gallons of treated and untreated sewage, you know, coming from my house and yours, you know. However, in the grand scheme of things, it's not quite as bad as I think it seemed like in the media. I think the timing was really unfortunate.
Yeah. If you were camping on Lake Billsby for the 4th of July.
My heart just went out to the folks downstream of us, certainly. But I found it really interesting, kind of the media attention to it. And rightfully so, we, you know, want to know what's going on with our public utilities and what's happening with, you know, our waste and how we're impacting our neighbors. But I lived in Portland, Oregon for a couple of years. And it was really astonishing to me because every winter there'd be a large rain event and they just had this combined sanitary sewer and stormwater pipe, and they'd get enough rain and they would just discharge into the Willamette River. I mean, it would happen multiple times a winter and no one blinked an eye.
Because they just figured it was diluted enough at that point?
Yeah, yeah. And it was just normal. That's just like how it was. And me coming from Minnesota, I was horrified that happened, because that's a thing we have stopped doing now. We've separated our sanitary sewer and our stormwater. But I think, you know, it was out of the ordinary. So, you know, it gets attention when something like that happened. I appreciated that it brought attention to water quality in our area. It got people talking about that. You know, we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Absolutely. But I would love to see some of that attention go to when one of our really beautiful lakes in the area turns pea soup green and people can't boat in it. You know, like, that's a thing we've normalized.
Yeah.
Is Northfield working with the Cannon River Watershed Partnership by working with you, asking you for your advice on future spills or anything like this happening? Were you called in at all?
We were certainly very interested in what was happening. We were getting calls from NPR News. I was talking to Terry here, you know, newspapers. We were kind of in touch about this. Because we don't have any sort of legal jurisdiction, we were basically just weighing in on kind of on behalf of our membership. We have about 400 members, people who care about clean water, who, of course, were paying attention and upset. You know, rightfully so. Our relationship since this incident with the city has been to try to lend a hand to maybe increase the education and outreach part. I think people want to know. So, you know, people are asking us what's going on. And I actually got to have a tour of the wastewater facility.
Okay.
Fascinating. I learned so much. You know, we saw where the fire was. We saw where the pipe broke, kind of where all these different instances have happened. We saw where the trucks come to take the solids away. And I really think people, the public, would really benefit to seeing that process and seeing that water when it goes out.
Well, it's one of those out of sight, out of mind things.
Absolutely. And so I think people, it brought to people's attention, oh, right, after we flush the toilet, some stuff happens, but then that water goes in the cannon. So the water level was pretty high during the incident, so it was fairly diluted. You know, like I said, we wish it wouldn't have happened, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, a big spring rain, you know, when fields have just been planted and there aren't any roots to hold the soil in place, I don't know if this is a bigger or smaller effect than that.
When you brought up, you know, the pea soup green lakes, my wife and I were talking about if we were to, looking at building, if we were to build on a lake, would we ever do it around here? And there's no way. Because by August, you don't even go outside because of the smell nearby.
And that is something that, talking about, you know, how things have changed in 20 years or 30 years, it didn't always used to be that way. And now, we've just normalized it.
Is it, you know, up north you have a lot more crystal clear lakes. Is it that they're cooler lakes, or is it there's less runoff of fertilizer, things feeding the algae?
It's largely the latter. So it's largely, and not just runoff coming from, you know, fertilizer or farm fields or animals, but also humans. So if we have a lake that's really developed and every single house on a lake has a septic system, and if your septic's not into compliance, that's going to leach into the lake as well as potentially groundwater.
Or fertilizing their grass.
Yep, absolutely. So part of it is a development thing versus, you know, if you go up north and there you got a lake all to yourself, there's only one house. And
well, I always found it interesting going out to South Dakota to do some pheasant hunting and stuff. I'm out in some areas where there's lakes, not without a single house around it. Mm. It's all farmland. And I look at the lake water, and it's pretty clean.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I come back here to Minnesota, and I see a lake that's nothing but houses around it. Farmland is further away. That lake is really green. So what's going on there?
Sure. Well, each lake, the watershed, the basin for each lake is really different. So there have been a lot of studies. Every 10 years, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency does a study of our watershed. They're supposed to do every watershed every 10 years. So we just finished ours 2017. That process got kind of got finalized. They are looking at the watershed as a whole. They're looking at the sub-watersheds, and sometimes they're even looking at a lake level or a stream because each situation is so unique. So we have a couple of really pristine lakes in our watershed. There's kind of five that are like our top our top most beautiful lakes, and if you ask me to name them, if you give me a minute, I might be able to.
I know we go down to Lake Francis, which is just outside of Waterville, and it's crystal clear, but it's also spring fed and cold.
Right, and it depends on what side of the lake. Sometimes, if you know the wind blows things one way, or so every lake is different. You know, basically, the most pristine lakes might have a really small basin, so you're not taking in. Versus Circle Lake has a huge watershed, so they're taking water into their lake from a huge area.
Okay,
yeah, and some, you know, then there's all this other like lake biology of. That is not my expertise, but there's other factors.
We got to keep the show under an
hour.
Yeah.
Well, talking about lake biology, I will ask you, there was a recent fish kill off in Lake Bilsby.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Was that something to be really concerned about? Did people cause that, or what happened there?
Yeah, it's looking like that was probably a human caused.
Okay.
An illness that came from release of probably koi or goldfish, like pets.
Somebody
that
had a pet
had.
They didn't want anymore. And
yeah. And then these, you know, store-bought pets, they have this certain disease, and I didn't write down the name of that, but and so then that spread.
It was herpes, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It was a herpes. And so then it spread to the wild carp that was in there. And, you know, I read some people being like, that's great. That's the way we're going to get rid of carp.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask you that question.
That is not my area of expertise. I think the DNR is actually looking into that as potentially a biological solution. I don't think they're at the point, like they would not embrace somebody going to do this right now, because there's, you know, you open Pandora's box and you don't know what other repercussions there are.
Yeah, we'll bring in the Japanese beetles to kill off this other insect that's a pain in the butt, and now these are worse.
Yep. And mm-hmm. So, and actually, I believe that kill happened just before the wastewater discharge, but they happened so close in time, I think in our brains we kind of mush them together.
Yeah, because I know I talked to some people thinking one caused the other, or not.
Yes.
The sewage.
The carp was beforehand.
Yes, it was. Yep.
Well, that's good.
Well, we're getting a little bit short on time, but we're not quite finished yet. So here's your chance
to toot your own horn.
Oh.
Yes.
You know what? Why don't you tell us some success stories that you've had?
Okay. Well, I would say we've been talking about wastewater, the municipal plant here in Northfield. We've been talking about, you know, people around lakes and their septic systems. So a big success story for us is we have been part of the Southeastern Minnesota Wastewater Initiative, and we employ two facilitators who cover all of Southeast Minnesota, so all the way from here down to the very, very corners of the state, and they work with small communities who are, these are my two favorite words, unsewered or under-sewered. So maybe they have a failing septic system, you know. Oh. My house's septic is failing, and, you know, my next-door neighbor's is failing, and the person next to them is too. So we work with small communities to try to find a solution for those wastewater problems. So that's a program that we've been doing for 15 years, and gotten funding from a couple of different sources. But a lot of folks around these parts know about that program because we did a big project around Roberts Lake. So that was completed in 2014, so just outside of Faribault. And every project we do has a different solution because there's different people and there's a different geography. And we really work to make it grassroots of what the community needs. And then we help them try to find funding, try to find grants or loans so that that financial burden isn't just on each individual house. So over 200 participating properties, including two resorts and one mobile home park, 95% of the properties around Roberts Lake did choose to participate. And we got 50% of the costs covered by grants and 50% by a low interest loan.
Boy, to make that, it really that's a big success story.
That's right. And and we go in Faribault, and a lot of people do know us, like, oh, you cleaned up Roberts Lake. Would you come do that to my lake? And and we can say, well, we can try. You know, we start the process and just see what makes sense for the community. Maybe it's a soil-based solution. Maybe it's, yeah, you know, like piping it into Faribault like Roberts Lake did.
If someone wants to get involved with the Cannon River Watershed Project,
we would love that.
How do they do that? And what type of involvement are you looking for?
Yes. Well, we are a membership-based organization, so we have about 400 members. You can become a member by giving us $25 a year. You're very welcome to give us more annually, but $25 makes you a member. And then the other way to become a member is to volunteer at least 3 hours annually. The reason why we have the 3 hours annually is because we have a big watershed-wide cleanup that's coming up, as I mentioned, September 15th. So on Saturday the 15th, we'll be at least 10, it's looking like maybe more like 12 or 13 communities all around the watershed, mainly on the same day. A couple communities that Saturday doesn't work for them, so we might do it a week later in Red Wing, say. But folks come with their church, folks come with their work buddies, they come with their families, they come on their own, and they find a spot. And in the morning of September 15th, we've got garbage bags, we've got gloves, and we go out there and pick up all the garbage and the litter that we find along the river. It's a really, really fun time. Most places have a picnic lunch afterwards to thank people. We'll have a hanky to give folks. So the people who come to our cleanup, we usually get 200-ish across the watershed on that single day. This is our 10th anniversary, so we're hoping that we have even higher numbers. It kind of depends on weather. It depends on how high the water is, certainly. But that's a really easy way to get involved with us, too.
Now, if you're listening in your car, don't pull over, or do pull over if you're going to write it down. Don't just pull out a pen, write it down. We will have it on the KYMN community calendar.
Yes.
We will get that date out for you, so you don't have to drive unsafely right now to make sure you're there. We'll get you there.
If you are home, we have an updated website, so we're still figuring out a few things, but our website is www.crwp.net, and you will be able to pre-register for the cleanup there, as well as see the other family-friendly events we have. We do a film event in February, so come and get involved.
If I have an organization, a church group or a hunting group or something that would like to have you come and speak to us about what you
we
are
love
you
doing
available
that.
To do
we
that?
Love doing that. Yes, I go to a lot of different organizations, and then our community engagement coordinator Kevin Strauss also makes the rounds. I guess we all kind of go to all these places, because then our conservation program manager Alan Krauss also talks to different farm groups too, and looking for partnerships.
So again, the best way to contact you for that is through the website.
Yep, you can go to the website, and you'll find all of our email addresses there, or give us a call. Our office is right here in the south end of downtown Northfield.
Where'd you guys move? You had to relocate.
Yeah, we were up at 4th and Washington. Our sign is still there. Hopefully, by the time you're hearing this, it is not there anymore. We are behind Ritchie Eye Clinic
at
7th and Division. Division kind of doesn't exist there right now, but soon we'll have a brand new beautiful street and then our
kind of the same building
there.
With Sterling Pharmacy
exactly.
there.
Yep.
And, okay.
All yep. Right. We're in the same building with HealthFinder Sterling, the walk-in clinic. That's us back
All right.
there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Great.
Well, I appreciate you coming on.
And thank you so much for having me.
We did learn a lot of interesting facts here, but have not learned yet about Dave's interesting facts.
Christy, this is where I try to stump Andy.
Okay, let's hear it.
And I usually do, but feel free to join in here because Andy's not a lot of competition, I'm afraid. Mm.
Dave likes to prove that Google is smarter than me.
He keeps throwing that out. The United States use about how many gallons of fresh water every day?
7.
7?
7.
No.
I'm going to go.
It's in the millions.
Oh, well, I would have gone billions, so. I'm going to go 700 million.
No, you are really incorrect.
No idea. Don't look at me.
Actually, 346 million gallons of fresh water is used every day.
What's the population in the U.S. right now? Isn't it like right around 400?
A little under 400 million.
So less than a gallon per person of fresh water.
Every day.
Between my shower and what I drink alone. Huh. Numbers a little low. I don't know, Dave. I don't know, Dave.
You know,
somebody
Google that. That doesn't sound right, does it?
It doesn't.
Okay, we'll move on.
Somebody will email you.
Yep.
Let's take a look at irrigation and thermal electrical power. What percentage of the United States water is used for that? Fresh water is used for that. Now, you got to keep in mind there's a lot of water going through dams producing electricity.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with 16%.
No, that's really low.
Okay.
50.
That's still low.
Really?
I'm being told 80% of the water that is used in the United States goes through irrigation and thermal electrical power plants.
Are you sure it's not hydroelectrical power, Dave?
Well, it says thermal.
Well, Dave, we're going to have a talk after this show, Dave.
It's a showdown.
I'm going to redeem myself on this.
By having a real question?
Yeah, an actual real question. The average person in the United States use how many gallons of water per day?
Well, apparently it's less than one, according to your interesting facts.
No, this one is actually correct, I think.
Oh.
Is it 23?
No, it's actually higher than that.
I feel like I read 23 somewhere.
That was 30 years ago. 37.
No, it's gone up quite a bit more than that. We are now using almost 80 gallons of water per day.
Per person. Wow.
Ooh.
Now, that seems high to me. No.
I'm going to stop showering.
Yes.
You guys are lucky you don't have to be in a room with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you're calling it quits after that?
Yeah, I'm calling it quits after that. I'm going to have to do some rechecking here.
Well, let me know, Dave, when you find out.
Yes, yeah. Well, Christy, thanks again for joining us. That was great.
Oh, talk about enthusiasm. I can see.
Yeah.
Getting you in a room.
That's why we're going to have many more success stories by the next time we have her on.
Yes, please.
And that's only going to be 3 months from now, so get busy.
TikTok. All right, here we go.
Well, we'd like to remind you to tune in next week to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where you can find out about beer, which is made with water.
That's right.
Yes, it is.
That was combining the two there. So,
that was a good connection there, Andy.
As always, the show will be archived on kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. And a shout-out to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page. Thank you again to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. And as always, until next time.
Hey, get out there and enjoy the outdoors, folks. Thanks.
Thanks.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.